The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Everyone, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. That's Your State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Agency, Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the May 2023 edition of Our State Magazine. Celebrating North Carolina, the theme this month has been Soaring a Salute, or at least that was the main article and the picture on the cover. I read that last week about the World War II fighter plane that honors those who serve. That was an emotional reading for me, even though I did not serve in the war. In fact, I was born the day after the year that the war ended. Anyway, we've got some other good stuff to read here. We're going to start with an article entitled The Temple of Blooms. The director of Raleigh's J.C. Ralston Arboretum is North Carolina's Indiana Jones of plants. He travels to some of the world's most remote locations, braving treacherous landscapes and dangerous beasts in search of rare species to bring back to his shrine of flora. I'd like to see his bags when he comes home, wouldn't you? This is written by Rebecca Waltz, and there's lots of flowers on the cover, which takes two pages to introduce this article. It says on the left, which is a close-up of a long green leaf, the J.C. Ralston Arboretum on the campus of NC State University has more than 6,000 plant species. One of them is, oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble with some of these names, Jiangxi Bells, false Syningia, I guess it is, false Syningia, beautiful white plants. They have all these tiny little hairs, I guess, on the white surface. It makes it look like a down blanket, and then it opens up inside to purple dots, and at the very middle of it on the stamen, I guess, it looks like a leopard skin. Next is Angel Earrings Cascading Fuchsia, and there's four beautiful red fuchsia leaves here, a purple cup in the center, and then the white stamens. And we have a hardy chrysanthemum, oh, how dull, but that bee that's working away on it doesn't think so. Windflowers, they are white with maybe six leaves. And then here is a youngster running down a paverstone path in the arboretum. And then we've got a Japanese textile banana. That was the leaf that we saw behind the title, The Temple of Blooms. And it has lots of little veins coming out on its side. And then we have a variegated winter daphne, which is dark green in the center and then very, very light green all around the edges. Mystic Illusion Garden Dahlia. Whoa, there's too many leaves for me to count there, and they are greenish yellow. And lastly, a toad lily. How interesting. These leaves are a little bit, well, they're not flat. They're kind of like, they have a little roll in them, which makes them much more interesting. They roll to the outside edge. So we're looking at the convex surface, not the concave surface, and it's purple and white. And in the center, it's like an explosion has taken place. It looks something like, what did you call it? Remember the game of jacks? Those jacks. It looks like two jacks put together and make them purple on the tips and red and white dotted in the middle. It's just beautiful. So here we go. Stuck on a 6-inch wide ledge with a sheer cliff face rising to his left and a near vertical drop to his right, Mark Wetherington was more than a little worried. He'd been trying to reach a lily, and not just any old garden variety. This was a type of surprise lily with gold flowers, one that had never been scientifically collected before, growing in Taroko Gorge in a remote area of northern Taiwan. Wetherington wanted a specimen to bring back to the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. Wetherington has been working for the Arboretum since 2007 and has been the director since 2014. In line with North Carolina State Extension's mission, the Arboretum works to educate the public on gardening and diversify the American landscape. Wetherington maintains relationships with botanists around the globe, and when a new species or a new variety of known species is discovered, he travels to its location and tries to collect a specimen to bring back to the Arboretum. There, the plant is cultivated and then sent to plant breeders and nurseries to be propagated and eventually sold to the public. That's how Wetherington found himself on a narrow ledge in Taiwan. Most of the plants that he collects come from Southeast Asia because of the temperate climate there, which is similar to our own. And they usually come from remote areas, places that are so difficult to get to that farming, logging, and development have not disturbed the natural ecosystems, allowing many undiscovered species and unusual varieties to survive. Some of the species that Wetherington collects are so rare that they are only found on one mountain peak. That happens a lot in Asia, he says. You go to the next mountain peak, and there are different species there. Slowly, inch by inch, Wetherington did manage to get off the ledge. But it's not the only sticky situation he's found himself in while collecting. On the same trip to Taiwan, he spent the night in a car when downed trees from a surprise typhoon blocked the road in both directions. More than once, he reached for a plant without realizing that a green viper was wrapped around a branch within striking distance. In China, he encountered macaques, monkeys with fangs like a wolf, he says. They're terrifying. Not all of Wetherington's travel experiences are scary, though. He enjoys collaborating with colleagues from other countries, communicating through the shared language of botany. He likes experiencing other cultures, checking out local markets, eating foods that are foreign to him. He's been to places so remote that Westerners are a rarity for the locals, who sometimes line up to take photos with him and his colleagues. The walls of his office at the Arboretum are decorated with the souvenirs from his travels. Wooden canoe panels from Ecuador, ceramic roof tiles from China and Taiwan, maps from around the world. Still, why go to all the trouble? It's not just to make our gardens prettier or more interesting. It's also to make the American landscape more resilient. One of the biggest problems we have in our built landscapes, garden areas, and urban landscapes is that people tend to use the same plants, Wetherington says. Every time you do that, you open yourself up for more possibility of pests and diseases. Take rose rosette disease, which is transmitted by a mite that blows around in the wind. The host of the mite has long been the Cherokee rose, which grows sporadically on fence lines and along the edges of woods. A couple of decades ago, the knockout rose was introduced to the landscape industry. It's easy to grow in a nursery. It doesn't need to be pruned, and it flowers over a long period. So landscapers started planting it en masse. Suddenly, the mite had a new host, one that was all over the place, and rose rosette began decimating roses. At one time, there must have been 10,000 knockout roses in the North Carolina State Fairgrounds, Wetherington says. Now there are none. It really affected the industry. If there had been more diversity, that mite wouldn't have been able to move like it did. But with a wealth of plant diversity here in North Carolina, why travel to far corners of the world? Because the Arboretum's focus is on built landscapes, where topsoil has been scraped away to build subdivisions or commercial structures. Many of our native plants don't thrive in those conditions. For example, our native dogwood, Cornus florida, doesn't grow as well in urban or suburban areas as the Chinese species Cornus cusa did. That doesn't mean that none of the plants that Wetherington collects come from North Carolina. He's always got an eye out for rare plants, and when he's traveling around the state giving talks, he goes on hikes to look for specimens. Instead of gazing out at the views, he's looking around his feet or up in the trees searching for anomalies, like a fern growing a foot taller than others of its species, or a flower with an unusual color. Several years ago, a woman contacted the Arboretum about a beech tree that she'd seen growing in the woods on a neighbor's property in Rockingham County. Unlike a typical tall beech, this plant was a dwarf, weeping variety. Wetherington didn't believe it was really a beech tree until he drove out there and saw it for himself. Sure enough, it was a mutation unlike he'd ever seen before. The property owner allowed the arboretum to dig it up and take it to Raleigh. After years of trying to figure out how to propagate it and finally succeeding, the arboretum plans to send it to growers. Eventually, the white lightning beech cultivar may start popping up in yards across the eastern United States. And that gold surprise lily? Wetherington never did get a specimen. "That's the way it goes sometimes," he says. "Never mind. There's always another new discovery, always another plant variety to bring back to North Carolina to diversify our gardens. Always another adventure." Rebecca Woltz is a staff writer at our state, and the J.C. Ralston Arboretum is on Beryl Road, that's B-E-R-Y-L, in Raleigh, jcra.ncsu.edu. And now, for you beer drinkers out there, I'm a wine drinker myself, a new breed of beer. Thanks to researchers with NC State Extension, North Carolinians can now enjoy beer made with local hops, ushering in a new era for the farm-to-glass movement. The sun creeps out from behind the clouds to warm a gentle slope on the edge of a mountain valley in Etowah, 30 minutes south of Asheville. Chickens, ducks, goats, and sheep nibble and wander under the watchful gaze of a great Pyrenees named Winter. Below their feet, dormant in the soil, rests one of the most exciting new crops in North Carolina, hops. On the valley floor in the distance, the great slanted roof of Sideways Farms and Brewery emerges from a field of wildflowers. "In the past," says Sideways co-owner, farmer, and brewer John Schneider, "we tried a lot of different hops varieties. They all do bad." But that's changing. Sideways is one of the region's most dedicated producers of estate beers, or beers made primarily from ingredients grown on a brewer's property. Sideways grows ancient grains for its malt, beer's rich and sweet backbone, and rows of herbs and fruit to add bitterness and flavor. "It seems like so many breweries today are producing an industrial product," says Carrie Ann Schneider, John's wife and co-owner. "Our mission is to return beer to its agricultural roots. With fertile fields of blackberries, blueberries, elderberries, figs, orange balm, lemon balm, juniper, and other beer ingredients, the Schneiders are succeeding mostly. They can't for the life of them grow productive hops." Hops is the common name for Humulus lupulus plant, whose fragrant flower cones are the number one bittering and flavoring agent for beers, the agent most responsible for that beer-like taste that many know and love. The Schneiders share their struggle with all would-be hops farmers in the South. They can grow tall, luscious hops vines. Apparently you can say bines or vines, with bright, broad leaves. But when it comes time to harvest, they get hardly any cones. We always loved visiting wineries on vacations and seeing the grapes, John said. He wants his customers to have that same experience with hops. We want to have people get out and see things growing. The Schneiders have been trying to grow hops in their valley for nearly a decade. It was the first crop they planted. They tried American hops, English hops, hops from the Czech Republic. All failed. Until recently, John says, if anyone asked us, we told them, don't bother growing it here. Now, thanks to the work of a North Carolina State Extension researcher in nearby Mills River, Sidewise has four rows of a new North Carolina hops variety that was painstakingly tailor-made to rival the ones grown in the rest of the world. They are productive here, improbably productive. We should get a lot from these rows, John says proudly. 20 minutes to the north, on a valley ridge near the French Broad River, Dr. Looping Q's more established commercial hops grow in long, vertical, undulating vines that will reach 20 feet tall. His oldest hops yard consists of five rows of sun-weathered black locust poles strung with metal wires. He bends briefly to test a rusty hand crank, which can be used to raise the metal wires as the hops grow and lower them when harvest time comes. Q, that's Q-U, an affable and energetic hops specialist with the North Carolina State's Ag Extension's Alternative Crops and Organics program, has unlocked the secret to growing hops in North Carolina. Raised in northeastern China, he's an unlikely hero for North Carolina's legions of small craft and home brewers who've been desperately trying to grow their own hops for years. A plant breeder with the studious air of an academic and the rough hands of a gardener, Q is enamored with medicinal herbs. He has not historically been particularly excited about beer, its production, or its consumption. Originally recruited by the program's lead, Dr. Janine Davis, to work on a variety of emerging crops, Q has surprised his coworkers and himself by becoming one of the South's preeminent hops breeders. That North Carolina should have any hops breeders at all is nothing short of miraculous, as hops plants, unlike some other vines, like kudzu, do not grow well here. Hops have a lot of challenges in North Carolina. Humidity, excessive rain, profligate pests, but their biggest problem involves the length of our summer days. The hops we love are adapted to the northern climates of Central Europe and, more recently, the Pacific Northwest. There, summer days last 2 hours longer than in North Carolina. Because of that, our hops make fewer cones. Or at least they used to. Through years of selective breeding, Q has successfully created hops that produce more cones throughout the summer. Each year, he would select a few members of the hops varieties that did the best that season, producing the longest sidearms and plump cones, and crossbreed them to generate newer, even more North Carolina plants that would, in turn, do a little better the next season. Now, nearly a decade into this effort, Q has hop varieties with production levels comparable to those of hops in the Pacific Northwest. These new hops can be grown successfully in the South, but may be useful for growers in other states who are having to contend with hotter temperatures and more extreme precipitation each year. To Scott Jennings, innovation brewmaster at Sierra Nevada's Mills River Outpost, that is a big deal. Sustainable practice are in our DNA, Jennings says. We incorporate local hops as much as possible, because of our scale, we can't even begin to meet our hops demand from local or East Coast suppliers. Sierra Nevada is a hops-focused brewery. An inheritance that harkens back to 1980 when founder Ken Grossman decided to brew what became the first hops-forward beer since Prohibition to be commercially successfully made in America, the Pale Ale, which you can still enjoy today. According to company lore, that decision helped launch America's craft beer movement. From a global beer history perspective, it was certainly not the first time that was done, Jennings said, but at that time it was absolutely earth-shattering. Like most breweries in the country, Sierra Nevada sources its hops from the Pacific Northwest, some 2,500 miles away. For the thousands of craft brewers in the South like Jennings, that's an extraordinary limitation on their ability to lower their carbon footprint and grow local beer. It also places the nation's hop supplies at risk if climate-driven changes make the Pacific Northwest less hospitable to hops in the coming years. Now we've got native North Carolina hops, Jennings says. One's growing so close to Sierra Nevada, in fact, that you can almost see them from here. Across the river from Sierra Nevada, the wind begins to rattle the vines in Q's hops yard. Q moves with sure footing to his last row, which overlooks North Carolina State Extension workers tending to tomato crops in the valley below. His eyes alight on a special vine at the end of the row. It's not very tall, but it's noticeably dense with clumps of sun-dried cones that catch the breeze and jangle the hanging wire. Q tugs off a cone. NC-1707 is relatively short, he says, referring to the variety by the numeric code that he gave the hops at conception. But the yield is good. The beer it produces, also uniquely North Carolinian, is good too, he says. John Schneider is one of the hops farmers who first approached Janine Davis for help in the early 2010s. Today he grows his own hops using Q's latest varieties, supplemented by hefty, fragrant bags delivered from Q's hillside vines. John was able to produce several truly local beers this season using hops hand-grown and harvested by Q and his team. In particular, John designed his beer to take advantage of the unique characteristics of Q's most promising hop varieties, NC-1601 and 1707. NC-1707 produced a delightful fruity golden ale. NC-1601 made it for a spicier, warmer, more rounded beer. John is pleased with the outcome. He can now envision a time when we will treasure certain years' hops and beer vintages the way we treasure wine, keeping a bottle of our favorite 2022 Pilsner, for example. In the wine industry, it's kind of a special thing to know that the grapes have changed from year to year, he says. That could be the future of North Carolina hops, too. Q is glad to have been part of the effort to bring hops to North Carolina. Since coming to the United States with his wife 30 years ago to pursue his Ph.D., he has mastered his field of study and works on crops in five different U.S. states from coast to coast. Always he was driven by a love of science, time outdoors, and working with his hands. Davis says that Q has created a legacy in his adopted state where he settled down for good 20 years ago. He's kept the hope for North Carolina hops industry alive, she says, noting that Q has constantly planted, weeded, harvested, fundraised, and analyzed hops data for the better part of a decade. He's been a one-man show. When he takes on a project, he doesn't stop until the work is done. With humility, Q concedes that his recent breakthrough was exciting. We've looked forward to this day for a long time, he says. Does Q, doesn't usually care for beer, enjoy the one that his homegrown hops produced? Hops that may ultimately make farming hops viable in the South? I feel that the beer is pretty good, he says, and laughs. More importantly, everybody else says it's a good beer, too. That was written by Aaron Rubin, who's a science writer in Durham, and he studies mental health and the environment at Duke University. Are you interested in going to the Sideways Farm and Brewery? Well, it's on Ede, E-A-D-E, Road in Etowah, E-T-O-W-A-H, North Carolina, way down there on the far left bottom, so to speak, looking at a map of the state. And Sierra Nevada Brewing Company is in Sierra Nevada Way, conveniently, and Mills River, North Carolina. They both have websites, sidewaysfarm.com and sierranevada.com. And let's see, we have about 3 minutes left or so, so I think I shall turn to page 34 and see what pops up here for our reading pleasure. blown away in Hayesville. On his family's homestead in Clay County, an artist transforms molten glass into whimsical sculptures that hold dancing rainbows. A couple of them pictured here, they are indeed gorgeous. In a studio on the site of a former hay barn near Lake Chattooge in Hayesville, David Goldhagen carefully dips a blowpipe into a furnace and pulls out a ball of molten glass that's more than 2,000 degrees. He turns it, slowly cooling, smoothing, and reheating before adding brilliant shards of crimson and gold. He again reheats the evolving mass and, using jacks, shears, and tweezers, continues the process of layering and blowing, pulling and stretching, coaxing the piece into an elegant heart. For more than 40 years, Goldhagen has created about 10 glass sculptures every day, usually hearts, angels, rainbows, and infinity signs, designed with a sleek and modern flair and a kaleidoscope of colors. Sometimes his work is commissioned for a specific meaningful purpose. He recently made a series of glass sunflowers for a mother in remembrance of her daughter. "Glass blowing is my version of poetry," he says. "The piece is the story. It's the poem. When you read, you get inspiration. But in this case, you have this visual piece that's inspiring." While earning an English degree at Tulane University in New Orleans, Goldhagen took his first glass blowing course as an elective. A professor encouraged him to follow his dream of becoming an artist. After graduation, he honed his skills at the Pilchuck Glass School in Seattle and the Penland School of Craft in Bakersville before deciding to build a studio on his family homestead in 1979. Now Goldhagen's art can be found across the United States and in permanent collections throughout North Carolina, including at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh and the Asheville Art Museum. Visitors who live closely, let's see, what is that? I don't know whether you can hear that alarm, but it's going off in my ears here. I apologize for that. Let's see, they can be visitors who live close to Goldhagen's studio regularly stop by to watch the artist at work manipulating liquid glass in a dance that reflects his imagination and innovation, contemplation, and creativity. Marianne Leek wrote that. She's a freelance writer in Hayesville. Goldhagen Art Glass is at Goldhagen Studio Drive. How did you get that? In Hayesville, North Carolina. GoldhagenArtGlass.com. Beautiful pieces. Here's one in the shape of a figure eight, but inside it's streaked with purple and yellow and maybe a little bit of red. And he loves to do shape. Here's that heart-shaped one he talks about. It has, at the top of it, it has an extra ball that just jumps out of the surface at the top. Just gorgeous. Worth seeing, I think. Well, we've run out of time with today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.